Jim Steinman's Bat Out of Hell, the musical, is playing for a limited run at New York City Center starting August 1st, featuring Meatloaf's timeless hits like Two Out of Three Ain't Bad, Paradise by the Dashboard Light, and I'd Do Anything for Love, but I won't do that. It's winner of Best Musical from the London Evening Standard Theater Awards 2017. Tickets are now on sale at batoutofhellmusical.com. What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside, well, normally I'd say the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano. He's not with us today, but, all right, so I this is a weird way to start the show, whatever, I don't care. I have been referring to Graham Barfield as the next-gen stats guru, but it was brought to our attention recently that Graham looks like a much younger version of the actor Tom Skerritt, who's best known as playing Viper in Top Gun. And so now I'm wondering if maybe he should be the fantasy Viper. Yes. I feel like this is a thing we should put out on the interwebs.
I mean, I don't get to choose my nickname, right?
No, but nicknames like, choose you.
If I were given the choice between the Guru and the Viper, I mean,
I think the fantasy Viper
it has
is
to
it.
Be the Viper.
Well, we might as well just go on and ask our guests who are here with us today. You know them, you love them. They are the leaders of the Foot Clan, Andy Holloway, Jason Moore, and Mike Wright. Welcome to the show, guys. I guess I have to ask you. I mean, if you had the choice between Next Gen Stats Guru and Fantasy Viper, which way are you guys going?
How is that even a question?
Yeah, I mean, come on, it's Viper all Viper. The way.
Is he going to commit to the mustache only?
I mean, that's the thing, though. Is like, I think I'd look pretty ridiculous just with the stats.
There's only one way to confirm that.
I mean, you guys haven't seen me with a beard, but if I don't have a beard, like my jaw and everything, I look like a small child. Well, yeah.
I mean, have baby soft skin.
Thank you. I guess.
Oh.
Mike's making his mark on the podcast already.
Absolutely. So I guess that's it. I mean, we can put it to a vote to the internet, but I feel like we have spoken.
The Viper.
The appropriate party has spoken. Done. He is now the Fantasy Viper. So I'm glad we got that out of the way.
How's your snake sound?
Back
that's
out.
That's a leaky tire.
Back
<That's>
out.
It's not good. I don't practice snake noises.
You're going to have
don't.
To.
As much as you might
You're
think.
You're going to have to.
Oh, man. We got a full show for you today. Of course, the footballers are here, so we will talk to them about a myriad of things. We'll do a fantasy draft of things because I think that's just a fun thing to do with people around here. We've got some news and headlines, of course. But before we do that, as always, we'll go behind the glass to talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy Esquire. Murph, you got a new studio back there, man.
Yeah, a lot of new toys, but they're like half-broken toys, so I'm not like fully excited yet. But
it's the Island of Misfit toys
back
there.
Yeah, we're slowly getting there, and thanks to everyone that put a lot of hard work into this studio for like 2.5-3 weeks, they did. But we will use this studio, and we also will use Stage 5, which we used a little bit ago, which looked really, really nice. So we'll do a little bit of both. We're going to have 2 shows coming up soon when the season's starting, so it should be fun.
Eddie, I got a text from my dad last week, and he was like, I saw some of the videos you guys shot from the new studio. He's like, it looks great. I'm like, well, don't get used to it.
I mean, we will use it. It's a lot of moving parts to get there, but you guys did look really, really good in there. The set's just awesome. Not that this one's bad. I think I'm just used to it for 3+ years being here, but that new one downstairs looks really, really nice.
Yeah, so looking forward to using it, which actually is a nice transition because the footballers are here, as I mentioned. You guys are joining us this year for League One, which is a new thing we're doing here. We're doing a big fantasy league where it's some people from in our building, it's some celebrities. I think Schoolboy Q is involved.
Schoolboy Q, Lindsey Vonn.
Lindsey Vonn is going to be involved. I don't watch the show Riverdale, but somebody from the show Riverdale. I know I'm sounding awful right now by saying that.
Yeah.
But
we got FaZe Clan too.
FaZe Clan.
I was going to say we heard someone from FaZe, and we've heard who it is.
Yeah.
FaZe Banks, I believe.
Yeah, our boy Banks
is going to be FaZe. And then you guys are joining, right? So you are going to be combining the three of you to be one team. So I need to know which one of you is going to be the mastermind of this. So I can sort of, read up on everything you guys like.
Depending on the finish, I'll be the mastermind. No, I think it'll be a team effort here. I'll just have to resist. These two guys seem to align on things more often than not. So we'll see what happens.
We're a strong tripod where, I play very risky. Jason plays very safe, and Andy's kind of right there.
More accurate. Yeah, right.
The,
you got
right
it.
In the middle. But so, like, when we actually, when we combine the three of us and we can actually have the checks and the balances, I think our unified mesh wow. brain is stronger than just a one.
So it's the three branches of the,
so
the
you
footballer
could,
theory.
So you could concede the league if you would like to do
just,
that already.
Just hand it over right now, huh? So you guys started this thing in 2014, right? I mean, just kind of a bunch of guys trying to figure out, do something new. Did you ever imagine, I mean, the way the Foot Clan has grown, the whole community, did you ever think it was going to be like this?
Not really. Not like this. I mean, it's just crazy how fantasy has grown. All the technology around fantasy, all the exposure, the growth of the NFL. You know, Jason, so Mike and I started the thing literally doing a podcast for our league. It wasn't for anybody else. We just got on
our
once a week.
Our listenership was amazing.
Yeah, it was 11 listeners plus us. And then, you know, we started doing that, and we just – it's for the community of the league. You know, you get in these leagues with people that you love. You love making fun of them. You love lording your victories over them. You love making fun of stupid trades. That's all we did. And Jason comes along. He's like, guys, this is just too fun. You got to do this for the public. And then, you know, we brought him along too. And then we grew. It was all you.
I don't want to say it, but you said it.
But he was, Jason, to his credit, he was the one that said, you know, this could be really big. And I'm like, yeah, but big in fantasy. I mean, fantasy, that's a niche. What can happen? I mean, how can I, you know, make a living doing this, get to talk about something you love doing, and here we are somehow. I don't know.
Well, and it's expanded now because you guys have expanded to the Spitballers podcast, which goes just beyond fantasy and just more of a comedy kind of podcast. I mean, what is next for the Foot Clan empire now?
Not baseball, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, we had an interesting conversation about that before the show.
I did not
He's
realize.
He's never spoken something truer.
Yeah, it's really true. I mean, people ask all the time, are you going to be... You know, do other sports, do fantasy baseballers. Like, the problem is baseball's terrible.
No.
And I think we can all agree. So that's
we're
going
to ask you to leave,
issue.
Sir.
<We're> gonna, all right.
Thank you, Marcus. Thank you.
The real problem is season-long baseball just takes way too much
it
time.
It is a few more games.
Way
you
too
are
much
right.
just slightly more. Slightly more. Yeah. You know, before the show, when I went down to the lobby and you guys were standing there and I got you, I'm wearing a Roto-Wear Funkmaster Flex Spot T-shirt, and Andy admitted that he almost wore
it
the same
so
shirt.
Oh no!
It would have been super super awkward, but it did make me. I did have a fashion question, and that was Mike, your SB suit, which took off on the Twitterverse. Where did you get that?
And might I ask why?
Where and why?
So. The whole invite to the ESPYs was pretty last minute, and this might shock you and some of the listeners, especially if you know me. Mm-hmm. I don't own a suit. So I was looking, I'm like, what do I go just, do I go spend up and buy a suit that I can wear now and wear later? And then I found something on Amazon for $100 that had same day shipping. So I got that bad boy. It was a pink suit. And look, I knew it was going to be hot. So short sleeves and shorts, it just made sense. And it turned into this thing where I did the media red carpet. And they're pulling me on, like, okay, before we talk, who are you wearing?
Bezos.
Jeff like, Bezos.
Same day shipping Amazon. And people could not handle the fact that I bought a suit off of Amazon.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's amazing. I can't even say that it's out of line because, remember, the history of the ESPYs, we had Brian Wilson when he was still a thing with the San Francisco Giants wearing, like, an actual bodysuit to the ESPYs. So I feel like a pink short set suit, it's par for the course.
Oh, I took a cue from Beckham. And if you saw, Beckham was also in a short suit this year as well.
So
I'd be careful about telling Mike that he's too conservative at the ESPYs.
I was going to say, next year you've got to go like the Zeke Elliott route and maybe go the crop top
the
a little bit. Yeah, man.
I'll make a note.
There you go.
Oh, man.
I will say you're one of very few people that actually pull that off.
Yes.
So congrats.
Yes.
So
congratulations.
Thank congrats you. Because I would look so silly.
If Andy and I were there and we were all in pink suits, we would have a hard time getting out of the vehicle to go walk the red carpet.
Yeah.
He's got to own it, man.
Absolutely. No, I am not mad about it. All right. So fun and games aside, let's talk some fantasy football because that's deadly serious and we can never laugh about this ever again. So, Eddie, let's do some news.
What's the news?
We'll start in Cincinnati, where A.J. Green, or at least the news around A.J. Green, seems to be getting worse. There was a mild Twitter panic over the weekend when he first went down, and then it sort of calmed when it looked like maybe it was just a sprained ankle. That appears to not be the case now. I will say, when Zach Taylor is coming out and saying, we hope to have him back for the first half of the season...
Oh.
That is not encouraging news. So as we kind of go around the horn, I will start with you, Jason. I mean, what are your thoughts, your feelings on A.J. Green? Where are we looking at him now in drafts and that sort of
thing? My thoughts and feelings are, I think, more negative than most. Obviously, everyone's feelings right now are negative, that nobody wants to draft an injured player. But sometimes you see that ADP slip. You want to buy the dip. And I remember we do a show as we exit the season every year of stuff we want to remember for next year. Because every year, so when you make the same mistake year after year, you regret it. My biggest takeaway from 2018 for the draft season was don't buy the injury dip. You know, Doug Baldwin was a great value last year, except...
Until he wasn't.
He wasn't at all. He was just really injured. And so A.J. Green, I can be honest and say he's pretty much off my board in the sense that he'll never get to a point where I feel confident enough to draft. I mean, obviously, if A.J. Green's sitting there in the eighth round, sign me up. But he's not going to get there. He's A.J. Green. So that's where I'm much more opposed to buying the injury dip, having, you know, if you don't have an IR slot and you've got to take up a bench spot and then hope he comes back. And when he comes back and the Bengals... Was Andy Dalton good enough without A.J. Green to keep his job, or is Dalton now gone and the Bengals are playing for that number one pick next year?
Yeah, you know, I know, Mike, the natural progression has been, I think, to run toward Tyler Boyd. I just have this feeling that Boyd is going to be, you know, kind of status quo, and that somehow it's Joe Mixon that absorbed a lot of this thing. Am I crazy?
Not necessarily. I would expect Joe Mixon's his target volume to go up, but
right.
I liked Tyler Boyd. I mean, I like him more with A.J. Green there because I think Boyd is a good wide receiver, but he's not a one. And I mean, you can see that from his contract, the contract that he accepted. I mean, he said, yeah, I'm not going to get paid like the superstars. But he's a great two. What we do know is his target volume most certainly will go up, but will the scoring opportunities be there like they would when you have an elite wide receiver on the field? So I still like Boyd as long as people don't radicalize and start moving his ADP way up. If he's in the same spot where he was,
right,
then I'm still very happy to grab Boyd at that right, like fifth round area, sixth round.
I'm just sort of sad. I've said for years that I felt like A.J. Green, among the top level receivers, has always been the innocent bystander in Andy Dalton drive-by slander.
Oh.
Right? Like, everybody looks at Andy Dalton, they're like, ugh, and then somehow, like, A.J. Green catches a few shots because of that, and so now he's sort of gone for us for a while, so I don't know.
I just hope that Joe Mixon, the situation there is last year he couldn't get enough scoring opportunities.
Right. Yep.
And then you get, you know, a healthy Green, a healthy Boyd.
That's my concern, too.
Right? And so he could be the same kind of like can't get past that number 10 mark every week or something.
Offensive line injuries.
Yeah.
I was prepared to come into the season like really high on the Bengals. But, I mean, now with their offensive line concerns continuing to fall apart, now A.J. Green has dealt with this is his fourth toe or foot problem in the last 6 years.
Right.
Man, it's really tough to buy in. I mean, we could be looking at an offense that's going to trot out, because John Ross is also injured, shocker.
Yeah.
that's going to trot out like Andy Erickson and Cody Core.
Oh, yeah, Cody Core. Oh. Let's go.
Oh,
I mean.
Is this the Tyler Eifert resurgence that you've been projecting for decades now?
The opportunity will be there, but again, like who knows if he can stay on the field? The Bengals have so many question marks.
I mean, they do. They do.
Can we just get eight or nine games out of Tyler Eifert? I think that's
tough division too.
You know, yeah,
he looked good last year in limited targets. I went back and watched all of his targets last year. He was moving well. It's just
ability has never been his problem. Availability has always sort of been the issue for him.
But the problem with Eifert though is his calling card when he had the big season was the touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And we're all talking about, scoring opportunity is going to go down. Is he even going to be able to do that if he is available? So, Eifert, I was ready to cape. I was ready to stand for Tyler Eifert yet again. I moved that cape. I taking that off. I've replaced it with my Jordan Reed kit, so we got that
hey,
back
nice.
On.
I like it.
But
you just yes. like pain. That's yes. what you like. You like pain.
Yeah, self-inflicted misery. Yeah. Yes.
Does that cape come with like Icy Hot on it or something?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's yes, it's endorsed by Shaquille O'Neal.
There you go.
My back is always ready to go.
There you go. Speaking of injuries, the New York Giants. Their wide receiver core has been decimated, and it doesn't get any help because Golden Tate is facing a 4-game suspension for the performance-enhancing drug policy, running afoul of it. Look, we mentioned the injuries. They've got guys hurt. You know, we don't know what exactly they're going to do at quarterback, whether it's Daniel Jones or Eli Manning. Graham, I would imagine that Saquon Barkley is going to get 1,100 touches this year.
Yeah, Saquon Barkley has the upside to see like 375 touches this year, which is just insanity. And he's the main reason. I mean, all the touch volume is the main reason. I'm sticking with him at the 101. But Evan Engram, guys.
Yes.
That's the guy this year. I have been hammering him in the fifth and sixth round of drafts, and especially now with Tate out of the lineup. Corey Coleman just popped his ACL. I mean, the Giants' three-receiver tandem in their first 4 weeks is going to be very, very thin, and I expect Evan Engram to see all the targets.
Yeah, I completely agree. We were doing a mock draft the other day where we started at the 101, and we drafted Saquon. We came around, I think it was that 4-5 turn, where it was like, Evan Engram is there, the value is worth it, but we were a little worried to really go all in on these New York Giants and their great offense with multiple pieces. Would you be worried about that?
I can't do it either. I've had the same problem.
Just feels dirty.
We'll have Barkley at one or two, and it's like, oh my God, I don't know if I can have two Giants on the same team. So this could be dumpster fire so fast.
So if you believe in Evan Engram, you want to hit him in your drafts, maybe you pivot then off of Saquon with that first pick to allow yourself to grab Evan Engram.
Yeah.
Yeah, except, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to pivot off of Saquon as that first pick. And I say this as somebody who has like been carrying the banner for Christian McCaffrey as the 1.01, mostly because I just wanted to argue with people all summer long. But
oh, just like Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I do it because it's what my heart believes.
You like to argue, too.
I do believe it, but also like I just thought it would be a boring summer if we were all like, Saquon's number one. Like, let's move on. Like, that's not fun. So, but it is still hard to pivot off of that Saquon pick.
So much volume.
Yeah, I do think people are starting to come around to it, though. But, I mean, with Zeke's holdout still kind of lingering, maybe we'll get a little more push that Barkley's not the 101
right.
As we get closer to the regular season, but still.
Yeah. And we'll talk about Zeke a little bit later because I do want to kind of get into that. Last little bit of news. Andrew Luck is telling us things about his lower legs, his calves, his ankles, his Achilles. He was being very coy about it. Eventually, it just sort of sounds like if it were a regular season game, he would get out there and he would try to go.
Oh.
Andy, I feel like we've been down this road before with Andrew Luck, and I it's deja vu all over again in a lot of places.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you pause, doesn't it? I mean, we were in that same mock draft where we took Saquon 101. We took a couple running backs, and we were asking the question, well, would you go in on T.Y. Hilton as your wide receiver one in this draft? And part of the thing that went into my head was, what if Luck wasn't there for 4 weeks or right. 5 weeks? And then do I have enough confidence in Hilton to be my wide receiver one on the team? Because this Luck recovery process is so coy. You know, he's here. He's fine. Oh, wait, no. He moved too fast in the recovery, which is another way of saying setback in my mind is, right. Okay, you went out there. You had a setback. Now you shouldn't have to tell me that somebody's Achilles is okay. Like, I should just assume that about a player. And so the concern, there's concern. And you know, he's so high in draft boards at quarterback, he's off of mine right now.
And the timeline is what upsets me, is the fact that he was dealing with this months ago. This is why he missed OTAs. And so it's like the fact that it's not recovered, the most, like, reminiscent thing that I can think about for any player in football happens to be from the same player, where it was like, wait, why is the shoulder not better?
Wait, so you're saying you're not trusting the Colts injury
information? I am not trusting the Colts injury information.
God, it burns me, too, because I had kind of gone big in on Andrew Luck being the QB1 this year, but now I have to rethink that a little.
Well, and let me ask the branching question, where, yeah, T.Y. Hilton is the obvious one, but people love Marlon Mack. They're taking him.
I love Marlon Mack.
Like in the back of the third or the early fourth. But Marlon Mack for a Colts offense that is not led by Andrew Luck, I mean, we saw he was not utilized in the passing game, where I think he has the ability to do it, but they said, no, that's Hines, that's your role. What happens to Marlon Mack if Andrew Luck is gone for a couple weeks?
I mean, he becomes kind of a Jag. I mean, he's just a guy at that point, you know. And I literally just wrote a piece yesterday saying that, you know, you guys are undervalued. People are undervaluing Marlon Mack, but that was with the assumption that Andrew Luck is there and healthy. If he's not, then everything about that falls apart.
Well, here's a comparison that popped into my head. What if Brady was out? What do you think of Sonny Michel?
Yeah.
How much does that offense change what they can do?
Shockingly, a little bit more.
I believe you would like him more?
No. I'm saying like more than Mac. Like it wouldn't be this blacklisting of, okay, well, Mac is no longer an option for me.
Part of what Mac and what makes him attractive to me is the scoring opportunities that I think would be decimated. I mean, maybe Jacoby Brissett would set the world on fire.
Yeah.
But it just limits the upside of Mac being a guy that could be, you know, a 10-plus touchdown player.
And he has to.
It is bizarre. I mean, Marlon Mack is a converted receiver out of USF.
Right, that they wouldn't use him.
So bizarre that they wouldn't use him. But, yeah, I mean, we're buying him for that red zone touchdown upside. Right. And, yeah, can't do it without Luck.
Cannot do it without Luck.
Get better, Andrew.
Get better, Andrew. And, Colts, please tell us, like, actually what's going on.
That would help, too.
Please. That's it. There you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
Well, speaking of Marlon Mack, let's talk some running backs because, you know, maybe one of the big debates going on Twitter and football Twitter in general is this whole RBs don't matter thing. I have been a vocal Twitter opponent of this. Whatever. I won't get into it. I don't really have the energy to fight it right now. But I do want to talk about running backs because they still do have some importance. They still do have a place. Look, as long as we're fielding the position and as long as we're drafting them in fantasy, they are worth talking about. So, the thing I always like to ask my guests when we have them on this show is, have you ever danced with the devil in a pen? No, that's not it.
I haven't.
Wait, if we're going Batman references, we're there.
Mike's
there
in. Yeah. Mike's
right,
in.
There you go. 1989 only, though?
Or yeah,
are we,
sure.
Are we branching out?
Are we getting nuts?
Let's get nuts.
Let's get nuts. No, the Todd Gurley situation, right? Because that's been one of the big talking points all spring, all summer long. What do we expect from Todd Gurley? I think we can all sort of agree that we're not going to actually see much of him until week one hits. I mean, Jason, as we look at this and you know, the Rams are being very coy about it, we're not going to see him in the preseason. Where do you feel comfortable taking him? I think first round may be out of the question, yeah. But are we looking, you know, late second? Are we going to the third? Where are we going?
Late second, I'm okay with, but I'm not taking him in the first. It's one of those situations where no matter what they say, you have to look at what their transactions have been. What have they done with their money? You know, they re-signed Malcolm Brown off the tender that was offered from the Lions. They used their draft capital to go, you know, get a running back in the draft that all three of us really like. They've already, you know, come out and basically said he's going to go from 80% of volume to 65%. Now, that's not to say that, look, if he gets the same touches and the same kind of utilization that Alvin Kamara has, he could be every bit as valuable as Alvin Kamara. But what Alvin Kamara does not carry with him is three games into the season after just dominating, you'd go, oh, no, the knee is swelling up again from my already pre-existing condition. And when you're drafting him in the first or second round, you're by necessity not drafting other great players.
I think what you have to do as a fantasy owner with Gurley is be the team that spent the first round pick on another running back. And then have, if you want to take him in the second round at that point, all your eggs are not in that basket of Gurley having to produce to be your one. Maybe you just stole a one in the second round and you've got this stack, but that's the situation I would be in where I'd feel more comfortable. Comfort is not kind of associated with Gurley right now, but that would be as close as I'd get.
And I've done that in a lot of drafts, mock drafts and regular drafts, right? There are multiples where I started, you know, maybe McCaffrey or Kamara and then come back around again and gotten Todd Gurley. And I'm like, I feel great about this with Gurley. Tell me Todd Gurley's my RB2. I can't be mad about that at all. Any fear of Darrell Henderson, Mike, maybe jumping in there and eating some of this up?
Yeah, there's certainly fear of him and Brown. I mean, you can't overlook the fact that Brown was going to be a Lion. Is that right? He was like the Detroit Lions offered him a contract, and the Rams said, "No, you're far too important. We're going to make sure that we have you on this team." So you
Brown is
have
poised
to, be
to disappoint
about it at least a little bit.
He's
yes,
poised to disappoint the
Henderson
owner
drafters
and the Gurley drafter just by the, you know, opportunities that he's going to get.
Yeah. Has he been drafted by anyone? In any of these offseason mocks.
I have not seen it at all.
I'm taking him late in drafts. Okay. Like late best ball leagues, just because you mentioned, I mean, the Rams re-signed him on a second round tender.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge, huge tender for a player that I don't think any of us expected them to spend that much on.
No.
I'm way more concerned about Darrell Henderson than you guys. He's a sicko.
He's great.
He's going to come in and I think really hopefully push for a role on passing downs very, very quickly. And if he proves to be the explosive playmaker that we saw
in college
at Memphis, it's going to be really hard for Sean McVay to take him off the field. I mean, the Rams run outside zone more than any team in the NFL. Darrell Henderson averaged 10.7 yards per carry on outside zone runs last year in college.
So on the one hand, I hear you. On the other hand, like, I felt that way about John Kelly. And you know what I'm saying? Like, I felt that way about John Kelly, and he kind of got buried.
I like John Kelly, too, but Darrell Henderson is so much better of a prospect.
And Kelly would turn into a sixth-round pick? I mean,
a sixth-round pick.
You're playing with house money in Los Angeles, too, with that offense. When you're a running back, C.J. Anderson walked in and looked like, you know, a resurgent player. I mean, you talk about this all the time, Jason. It's just you're not facing the same kind of defenses when you've got those three guys on the outside that are running around and threatening downfield.
Real quick, too. I mean, the Rams, this has been so underreported because the Gurley news has just kind of dominated the headlines. But the Rams' interior offensive line right now, they are replacing their left guard and center. Both of their interior offensive linemen have like two or three games started between them. That's just another layer of, I think, risk with Gurley taking him in the second round just because the Rams' offensive line might not be as effective as it once was.
And you'd have to have efficient Gurley.
Right. And now Darrell Henderson's vying for 8 to 12 touches per game. Malcolm Brown's going to mix in. I mean, it's not a situation I'm really finding myself taking too much of Gurley in the second round. But he does have that league-winning appeal because the Rams' offense is just so sick.
I mean, it is. What happens, by the way, we're talking about, you know, what happens for running backs if quarterbacks fall apart. What happens if, you know, what we saw from Jared Goff in the back half of the season is life now? If teams have sort of figured out Jared Goff in that passing game, I mean, that throws a big monkey wrench in the middle of everything.
Fingers crossed, Cooper Kupp is healthy. I think Cooper Kupp is the differentiator in that offense, and you just got to – I mean, every report that we've seen about his restructured ACL has been very positive. I mean, he seems legitimately ahead of schedule.
Yeah, I have to support my man, Jared Goff. He's my favorite late-round quarterback right now. If you look at the last 5 weeks when he did fall apart, two of those weeks – he didn't even play the full game, and he was playing Detroit with the 8 fewest passing yards allowed, Chicago, the 7th fewest. The Philadelphia game put up 339 yards, just didn't have a touchdown. And then Arizona, who was great against the pass, and San Francisco. Like, I think it was just a weird conglomeration of playing top-end passing defenses and the fact that two games he didn't even finish the whole thing.
They start the season Panthers, Saints, Browns. So to your point at the end of the season, if Goff doesn't have the confidence because of how the season ended and then starts slow, do you see like a disruption? Do you see people trying to buy low on Rams players if they have a tough start? I think that'll be interesting too, the confidence of Goff going into the new season.
Yeah, I think that'll be one to watch. Battle of the holdout running backs. Melvin Gordon, Ezekiel Elliott, both sort of in different situations. I mean, one's in Cabo right now, which I'm not mad at that. I wouldn't mind being in Cabo right now either. First, I guess, Mike, with Alfred Morris coming to the Cowboys signing, you know, there are conflicting reports. Like, some people say that maybe this is close. Other people say that it's not close. Are we starting to worry about Zeke at this point?
I'm not worried from the fact that I'm hoping that Zeke has wise counsel around him to remind him that there is a date that is approaching quickly that you have to show up. Or you're going to mess up your entire contract situation. He doesn't have the same leverage that Melvin Gordon does with the potential of 2 years that the Cowboys just own his rights. And that's not even counting in the franchise tag. So Gordon's I'm far more concerned about. Yeah. I think Zeke will be back. But what's at least somewhat nice, theoretically, Zeke should not be getting hurt while he's in Cabo.
Right.
So, I mean, he's... We don't have to worry about the training camp report. Oh, crap, Zeke went down. So that's somewhat nice, but I also, at the same time, I want him getting his body ready for contact, and I don't want the early hamstring injury from a player who was not in camp.
Are you suggesting that Cabo is not conducive to one getting their body ready for
There are things that he's probably doing in Cabo that are not sanctioned by the team.
I think it's interesting that Jerry Jones has kind of done an about face here.
Yes, that is interesting.
If you look back at it, what he said, like in the spring, he's like, "Yeah, we're going to be giving Zeke a new contract. We'll look at Gurley's contract, and we'll just go from there." And now he's like, "Yeah, you don't have to have a running back to win the
Super Bowl." He probably got the email from his agent, and it had a different number on it, and now he has to come out and at least play the part. I wouldn't be surprised if he's under contract within a couple weeks from now.
I agree.
But if you're drafting today, Graham, are you pausing about Zeke?
No, I'm still taking Zeke too.
Yeah.
I'm not too concerned. Mike, it's interesting. So you say you're a risky player. Mm-hmm. Where are you taking Melvin Gordon right now? Because I'm with you that I'm a lot more concerned about Gordon than Zeke.
I'm risky, but
not stupid.
Yeah, like I will. Like I mean, I have my take on Melvin Gordon.
Please,
and I believe he's going to miss games, and it's could be more than four games. I think that he has dug in. I think that the Chargers are very much dug in on their stance of we're not going to be bullied by a running back demanding that we pay him more money when we have him under contract and we're going to give him $5 million or whatever it is that he is owed. So I think that this one goes close to the distance and ends up with Melvin Gordon putting his hands on his face and saying, "All right, you win. I'll be back. I'll play these handful of games." But at that point for fantasy, it's too late for all of
right.
us.
Right. I mean, Gordon, he has to have some games played this year so his contract pulls over. So he can be eligible to become an unrestricted.
Otherwise, he's in the same boat next year.
Right.
I mean, look, and the chart is not the exact same apples to apples, but it was the Chargers that tried to play this game with Vincent Jackson many years ago, and then Jackson said, "Okay, half the season's done. Here I am now, so I don't get my contract problems."
And financially, I mean, obviously the Chargers and all NFL teams have the money to pay to their players, but the issue here is that of that extra revenue that the teams get themselves from their home games and their all of that, they're not selling out a 25,000 seat stadium. It's hard to say, let me pay a running back at the highest level while our franchise doesn't have the stadium yet and we don't have that extra revenue to really make that make sense. And historically, the Chargers have not been, they're frugal. We'll call them frugal. So I think it's just a bad situation where I agree with Mike. I expect missed games.
I'm going to correct you on one thing. The Chargers are selling out the StubHub Center. It's just with other teams' fans.
Yes, okay.
Like the Eagles came to town a couple years ago, and Eagles fans dominated.
I remember week one, they reported the sellout. And then you saw the photos where it's like, okay, sure you sold this out as there's a lot of seats out there.
It's just a late arriving crowd.
I will say I saw Dave Matthews in that venue. It's great for music.
They should CGI the fans in. They do in Madden. They should just put them in the stands on the telecast.
I will say it's pretty far. I mean, if you're driving from L.A., it does take some time to get down there.
It's a little bit. I mean, you have the intersection of the 405 and the 110.
Now we're on the Californians.
It's not great. But, the good part about that is if you're lucky and you drive by at the right time, you'll see the Goodyear blimp just parked on the ground there. There it is. Plenty of upsides. Jason, have we forgiven Le'Veon Bell? Yeah, I know he put out his apology the other day. Have we forgiven him?
I've forgiven him. I have a harder time forgiving Adam Gase. So there's some crossover there. even last year, Lev Bell was on average the second pick, and then you did not get him. So we just talked about this on another show. I am not a huge believer in Le'Veon Bell as an early first round pick. You've got him going from one of the best offensive lines in football with his running style, where he's patient with great vision. He just waits for the holes to open up and glides through them. The problem is, in New York, these holes might open up to defenders coming right through as opposed to being pushed out of the way. Right, or the holes don't open and the pocket collapses. So I'm just worried a little bit about the running style. Obviously, his pass catching can supersede all of that if he's used in that way, but since we haven't seen it in this system, I'm wary. Like Mike said, I'm risk adverse, especially in the first few rounds. I haven't seen it in that system, so hard time buying.
Do we have? And I'm asking this for the first time right here. Do we have a weird double standard with Lev Bell expectations in New York compared to Saquon Barkley and the offense in, for the other New York team, where we know the Giants are going to likely struggle on offense. We still don't care because the volume's there. Is it a weird double standard? I mean, Lev Bell was the best fantasy running back in the game, catches passes better than anybody in football. on the New York team that I think is on the way up with Sam Darnold.
I
just wonder about that because we're burned, right? We're burned by the bad Lev season.
And Saquon can out-athlete people, even at the NFL level, where that's – I mean, Le'Veon Bell is fantastic, but you wouldn't say that he's the super metric star that Saquon Barkley is. He's a tactician. He beats you with finesse and
so 300 touches for Saquon means something different than 300 touches for Le'Veon Bell in their current environments?
It does to me.
I will also say, and this is maybe just me being emotional, but Adam Gase has a lot to do with this for me in the sense that, you know, if you believe the reports, he didn't seem to want Le'Veon Bell around, right? And this is the guy who, at least from the surface, seems like he can be vindictive when it comes to players he doesn't want. Ask Jay Ajayi. Ask Kenyon Drake.
Right,
like,
right.
Ask these guys that he's had who are talented players who couldn't seem to get the football. And so if Adam Gase is in a situation where he doesn't really like Le'Veon Bell, he didn't really want him on the roster, like, you know, what's to say he doesn't say, you know what, I'm going to get this by the ball, you know, 12 to 15 times per game, and he's just not getting the kind of volume we expect him to get.
We have a nickname for Adam Gase on our
show.
No,
don't bring it up. It's not PC.
Oh, it's a censored nickname. We call him Mr. B-hole.
Okay. Okay.
For his utilization
it stands
of
for
Kenyon Drake.
There's been a lot of disappointment, obviously, with why isn't Kenyon Drake getting more carries?
Yes.
You know, the more effective player is not always seen in the field. Yeah. The vindictiveness you talked about. So the grudges, though, there's two grudges in play. That's why I'm saying we could have our blinders on with Lev Bell. I'd be curious, Graham, what do you think about his volume there in New York? Because people are afraid.
Yeah, I think maybe only Barkley has a higher touch expectation if you give him 16 games.
That's where I'm getting to with.
The problem, guys, is when Le'Veon Bell is on the board at like 1-9, do I take him or Julio Jones? Do I take Odell Beckham?
Yeah.
Do I take Michael Thomas? And most of those times I'm leaning towards the receiver because I think all three of those guys can become the receiver one, and we do have all of the concerns we just listed off about Bell.
Oh, I was hoping you had none of those concerns, and I could just change my whole thought process.
No, I mean, it's just, I've been, you know, when I'm in the back half of that first round, it's just those receivers are so, so hot.
Yeah,
I
haven't drafted Lev in any mock because I'm staring those guys down, too.
I mean, but you talk about that. I mean, part of the reason he sat out a full season is because he made the case. He's like, I'm essentially a number one receiver and a number one running back rolled into one. I mean, who's to say he can't challenge that?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I know we love Robbie Anderson, and I know, you know, people love Jamison Crowder, but like, Lev Bell can be as good as receiver as any
I'd throw
guys.
To Lev Bell if I was the quarterback. That's what I would do.
I'm excited to see what Darnold and Bell can do because Darnold desperately, desperately needed somebody that he could rely on either in early downs, check down situations, third downs last year, and he did not have that guy.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the running backs just kind of outside, I guess maybe the third tier or however you want to set them apart, but Derrick Henry, Marlon Mack, Kerryon Johnson, Leonard Fournette. I know we talked a little bit about Mack. Just kind of throwing this out to the room. Any one of those four guys do anything more for you than the other
one? Yep.
There's only one guy that can catch the football on a regular basis on there.
We will cede the floor to Jason.
Yeah, look.
He's wearing his lion blue today.
I am a year and a half in on my Kerryon Johnson truth reveal. There's no bigger believer in his talent than myself. I believe that because he is, to me, one of the best actual running backs in the league. He can run up and get the hard yards inside. He can get to the edge quicker than defenders. He's a great receiver. He has everything in his arsenal. The issue has always been volume. Is he going to get it? Obviously, they want to have a running back by committee. But the fact that they cut Theo Riddick is not just what the opportunity that opens up for Kerryon Johnson, but the ability that they believe they can cut Theo Riddick says they see what everyone else sees. And, you know, in the games that Kerryon Johnson, you know, you got to throw out those first 2 weeks where he was a clear backup, wasn't utilized much. LeGarrette Blount was the guy. They made that transition in week 3, and before he got injured in week 11, through that stretch, he was on average like the running back 14, and that was for a bad team. You know, if Matthew Stafford's injury that came out in the offseason was legit, and that, you know, they've kind of retooled, the offensive line is a little bit more improved, and now they're going to be using far more efficient people at the running back position, I just think I think it's impossible, and we've talked about this on the show, I think it's impossible that Kerryon Johnson finishes below the running back 15. I don't see a world, barring injury, where that happens. And I think his upside is to be a hyper-efficient. I mean, he was 5.4 yards a carry last year. Yeah. You can disagree all you want.
No, I shall. The thing is you say it's impossible for him to be in that range. I think it's going to be a challenge for him to be in the top 10. The last 2 years, you know, you've had two guys and then three guys and then two guys that were on losing teams at the running back position, finishing the top 10 in fantasy. They were 24th in points per game last year. My challenge is scoring opportunities for Kerryon Johnson on this roster. So I think it's going to be a challenge for him. I have him at 16. You said he finished 14 in that stretch. You got the injury concerns. I don't want to rain on your parade whatsoever. I really don't.
You can't.
Because the talent.
It's literally impossible.
Jason's already sold.
Inside.
But like last year, right? Like David Johnson last year finished at RB10. And it was a terrible year. And you say, oh, man, he salvaged it. 258 carries, 50 receptions. I don't think Kerryon hits those kind of numbers. Mm. And that got David Johnson to 10. That's my belief. And efficiency always changes with volume. Fantasy, I mean, it just does.
Fantasy points. Everyone here knows that so much more valuable with a pass than with a rushing attempt.
No doubt.
Matthew Stafford has always hyper-targeted the running back. That's why Theo Riddick's been valuable. He's not going to stop throwing to a running back now that he has a better one to throw to.
No, he won't.
So, you know, I mean, I think you're talking about Kerryon as a guy that could be up in the 85-plus target range, and that's not to guarantee it, but if something like that happens, now you're talking huge upside. You're not talking like, oh, he's the running back 13. You're talking about he's a top-five guy.
Last year, the couple games, a handful of games, that Theo Riddick was out and Kerryon was in, Kerryon went from 3.5 targets a game all the way up to 5.5 targets a game, and that was that's still factoring in Kerryon working his way to becoming the 1A of the offense. So I lean far more on Jason's side that I think Kerryon's going to be great.
I would have been on Andy's side if we had talked about this 2 weeks ago, but I flipped.
After the Theo Riddick cut?
After the big Theo Riddick news, man. Like,
are welcome.
In their eight games, in their eight games played together last year, Riddick out-targeted Johnson 45-25. I mean, that's humongous. The Lions running backs last year combined to put up the second most receptions among all teams last year. If we get, like you mentioned, Stafford's always had that pass-catching running back. If we get Johnson on the field on like 70% of the Lions' passing snaps, he's going to go nuts this year. So I was redoing my ranks based on the news, and I moved him up to 13, right above Devonta Freeman. How do you guys feel like about Kerryon relative to Nick Chubb, Dalvin Cook, Devonta Freeman, Marlon Mack too? We can throw him in there. Aaron Jones. That whole tier seems like that. There's just so much. I guess there's just no consensus in that range. How do you guys have that
Cook's
tier?
My favorite of that tier.
Mine as well. Mm-hmm. Cook would be the only guy I have above Kerryon out of those players you mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting thing because there's right now in PPR leagues, we want to target those pass-catching running backs, but we're still seeing Derrick Henry, we're still seeing Marlon Mack, Leonard Fournette, guys that aren't necessarily locked into passing down roles still getting put up into that tier. I do think it's an interesting kind of tier break that we have with all these running backs right now.
Yeah, you mentioned Fournette and Derrick Henry is a couple of them too. Like I know I took Fournette in a lot of early drafts because he just kind of fell in my lap, you know, late third round, early fourth round. But I think the more I think about this, you talk about running backs on bad teams, and the Jaguars still project to not be a great team this year. And I'm starting to kind
of. It's a tough division. I think that's the concern. Like for the counter bounce back case for the Jags, all has to do with what I think is a great Houston team, a great Colts team. Mm-hmm. I think Tennessee's underrated.
They've made
upgrades on both sides of the ball. So you start to look in the division and you go, wow, are the Jags really going to bounce back just because you had Nick Foles? Fantasy owners need to look at Leonard Fournette freshly, not through the lens of 2 or 3 years ago's expectations,
right.
And then you're probably okay with them.
I want to get your guys' take on them hiring John DeFilippo as the OC for the Jaguars, who for the last couple of years has been entrenched in the DNA. We're the tough men, and we run. We're going to run better than you, and we're going to play defense. And then you hire, as your offensive coordinator, a man who was just fired because he called too many passing plays. And that, like, that's been his MO and his two stops as an OC of over 600 passing attempts. Like, how does that jive with what we know the Jaguars have been over the last couple of years?
I don't I don't necessarily know that it does. But I think if you look at the Jaguars' moves in totality, they're all sort of confusing in that way because they went out and they broke the bank to bring in Nick Foles because they felt like Blake Bortles was no longer the answer, which, you know, I think we can sort of agree he probably
was always
wasn't.
The question.
He was. I mean, look, they went to the AFC Championship in spite of him, not because of him, right? So they bring in Nick Foles to try and shore up the quarterback position. They bring in, as you mentioned, John DeFilippo, but they still are holding to this idea that they want to be a run-first team and they still want to lead this thing through Leonard Fournette. So it doesn't make sense. I mean, I guess that's a long way of me saying that, yeah, I don't get it.
I will say, too, if they do pass more, it might be a good thing for Fournette because it'll be less contact in between the tackles and more targets for him. The running backs in this depth chart behind them.
Oh, they're great.
Does less contact mean less injury? Is that the implication?
I hope. With Fournette, that's you're keeping those fingers crossed there.
Yeah, but if that's the case, then why do you let a guy like T.J. Yeldon go?
Because you can bring Alfred Blue in, man. Come on.
Oh, yeah. My bad. My bad.
Yeah.
Totally forgot about that. Yeah, so there you go. It's a little bit of running back talk. I'm sure there'll be plenty more before we get to the start of September. They matter, people. Running backs matter. In the show with, I like to do this thing every now and then, the fantasy draft of things where we just go and we go around Robin and we draft, we draft things. So this week's topic, Disney has set a record for global box office sales for a single studio. They have hit $7.67 billion for this year. It's not even officially August yet, and they still have a few more movies coming out. The Lion King just went over $1 billion. Toy Story 4 is closing in on $1 billion. So I felt like this was a chance to say, let's draft which are the best Disney movies of all time.
Now,
couple of stipulations. I included all the Pixar films, so you get the Toy Stories, the Cars, whatever, Up, that sort of thing. Excluding any of the Marvel movies or the Star Wars movies, because while they are technically Disney properties now,
nobody
considers them Disney movies.
Yeah, I'm going out to see that new Disney movie, The Avengers.
right, exactly. So I feel like those movies don't count, but the Pixar movies definitely within the family, those definitely count. So I figure, one of our guests should be the first draft pick. So
I'll call it.
Because you're on the because you guys are on the ends, I feel like, Jason and Andy, you guys should like rock, paper, scissors.
Oh, I don't ever win that against him. So you can just take the first pick.
All right, so there you go. I think he has conceded to you now.
Yeah. I'm so happy because there's a Saquon here.
Okay.
It's Toy Story. Toy Story is, it created Pixar. It created the whole
was that,
genre.
20 years old now?
Sure.
Yeah.
Toy Story 4 just came out a few months ago.
I like that your argument against the
no,
movie.
No, it wasn't an argument against
it. It's 20 years old.
I was reinforcing it. It's set the table for the last 20 years.
My kids will not watch 3D computer animated cartoons. Like when they, you put on a cartoon that's just like flat, it's like, what is this old thing? So
high standards.
And that whole genre was created by Toy Story. So I'm going to go with Toy Story, the clear 101.
Wow. Okay. I will follow that up, and I'm going to go with The Lion King.
Hoping it would slip.
I really shouldn't have given away the first pick.
You should not.
Terrible decision.
The good news is we'll do a snake draft, so you can go back to back.
I get back to back?
Yeah, okay. we'll go back to back. So I'm going to go Lion King because, look, you want to talk about as much as Toy Story is iconic, The Lion King, equally iconic to the point that they made what I understand to be a fairly flat and sort of mediocre
I liked
CGI
it.
Remake. I haven't seen it yet.
They'll just bounce back to the animated version in 20 more years and then just keep going back and forth.
I feel like this new version of The Lion King is sort of like their new Coke, right? And they'll bring back the animated version. Everybody's like, oh, this is great. And then they'll make another $1 billion off that. But anyway, that's 1.02. Mike.
It's upsetting. I was hoping The Lion King would slip to me, so I will take the backup option in the hand animated. I'm going to take Aladdin.
Okay. Sniped.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. In your
sniped.
Face.
That makes. I guess I'll go have to go down and.
Yeah,
just,
those are the three. Those are the three that I wanted. Yeah. So that's great.
I'll just go with an old favorite and say Beauty and the Beast. It's classic.
All right.
Great. That means I'm gonna have to slide into some of the newer Disney movies.
But you get back to back here, Andy. So
I get two mediocre picks.
Here comes Pinocchio.
I haven't seen more of a Disney movie. I've got three kids than I've seen of Frozen in the last handful of years.
That's a great pick. That is actually
Frozen,
really good.
So Frozen is going to be my first rounder. And then on the turn, This is where it gets a little more complex, but I guess I'll go Little Mermaid.
That was the one. That's a good call. That was the one I was hoping got back. You know,
that's a good call.
We're five guys sitting at the table. Little Mermaid isn't usually like the one we all run to, but it's so
well,
good.
Well, you remember King Triton. That's where it's at.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The power.
Yeah, we do.
Yes,
true. How many rounds are we going?
I'll go three rounds.
Okay.
Three rounds.
I will just go with another classic here in Dumbo. I mean.
Oh, right. Yeah. All right.
I mean, I watched that movie probably like 15 plus times as a kid. So, yeah.
All right.
All right. All right, Mike, back to you.
All right. I know I am not going to win it if we put this up to any polls, but I will draft with my heart.
Oh, I know it's coming.
So I will take a Goofy movie, which is actually the best animated movie from the Disney studio with the best Disney soundtrack as well.
All right. Well, if we're voting with
I was hoping you'd go Aladdin 2, but whatever.
Trust me, I've seen Return of Jafar.
I mean, if we are voting with our hearts, then I got to
join me.
I got to dig back way into the vaults and go with the animated Jungle Book.
Oh, right.
Which the music is great. I think the animation's great. It's just, it has that, you know, from about the 60s, the late 50s, whenever it was. It's always been a favorite of mine, so I'm going to Jungle Book.
Yeah, that's good. So now I've got back-to-back
picks
to finish it out.
To finish this out.
So I know the two I should take, but those aren't going to be the two I take.
What? Are you going to Panda Bear?
No, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to do the opposite of my usual Panda Bear.
Good for you.
I could win the draft here with two clear picks.
He wants you to know that.
I want everyone aware. I'm going to take Monsters, Inc. because I love Monsters, Inc. It's great. And I'm going to not take the other Pixar movie that I'm sure one of you might take. And instead, I'm going with my heart, with my youth, my musical theater background, and I'm going Newsies.
I had a feeling.
That's a great pick.
Christian Bale?
Young Christian Bale.
Oh, that's a great pick.
Great. That's probably the best movie that's ever been made.
Wow.
Your pick is one of the best ever. Got it. Now I understand.
Man. Wow. So this leads me to a lot of different directions that I can go right now. But I feel like you put this in the air, Jason, by saying you're not going to take the other Pixar movie.
Put it in the air?
So Up.
Yeah, that's it should have been Monsters Inc. Up because
interesting.
Yeah, there it is. Nice. I mean, look, man, if you want a master class on how to make people cry and without ever speaking a word in a film, it's the opening of Up.
So you like crying. Crying makes the movie good.
I mean, look, every Pixar movie is about crying. You can't have a Pixar movie.
You can't
have one without crying.
We're not too proud to cry.
That's right.
Oh, man, I can't even think about Inside Out. We're not going to do it. But I'm still going to go with my heart. And the movie I have seen as much as a Goofy movie is The Emperor's New Groove.
Oh, so really? Good. Wow. It's so funny.
Which is... A lot of people don't even know it exists.
I don't even think I've seen it.
I didn't think David Spade would make this.
Oh, no. D Spade, shout out. Good friend of the show.
I'm gonna make Mike cry, and I was gonna take Inside Out.
I said don't talk about it.
I just loved the fresh take of just all the characters.
It's amazing.
It was actually a good movie.
Yes.
All right. All right. So
Andy, two picks left.
You get to finish this out, right?
Oh, it's up to me.
Yeah, we're going three.
You're going three.
Inside Out.
Oh, yeah, got out. It. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Finding Nemo.
Finding
Nemo.
That's
what, when you alluded to the other Pixar movie.
That's what I thought
you meant that, and it's not Up. So shout out to Rescuers Down Under. just as a little backup.
Shout out to the Fox, Peter Pan.
Yes, absolutely. The Robin Hood with the fox. Absolutely. Which, by the way, I mean, you got Baloo basically in both of those, in the Jungle Book.
That's back when they was just like the same three voice actors in
essentially in every movie. Absolutely. I mean, look, Andy, I feel like you have a strong draft. Frozen, Little Mermaid, and Finding Nemo.
Maybe giving up the first pick wasn't so bad.
From the fifth spot, I feel like you had a pretty strong draft there. So,
thank you.
I don't know. Maybe will we try to maybe put this on the interwebs, put this up to a poll?
At this point. Now that
then
you've said
I
it.
Take Up.
All right. Guys, I had a lot of fun. You guys kind of made the world tour here. I mean, you were in Rich Eisen's show. You guys were doing a show at Largo for folks in. It's sold out, though. I'd say for folks in LA to go see it, but it's sold out. So.
Drive to Phoenix.
You can listen on Monday. The live show will be up.
There you go.
Yeah.
So Eisen, you guys are going to do to the folks at Yahoo.
Are we allowed to say Yahoo?
We have plenty of friends over at Yahoo. Yeah. We're good.
Matt Harmon, come on now.
I wasn't sure if we were allowed to say his name.
Don't say it out loud. He'll get ideas.
Does he have the California tan now?
Absolutely. He's fully California'd out, man. He lost weight. He's in shape. He's super California.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
anything below 75 degrees and need a jacket. But hey, I appreciate you guys stopping by, man. It's been
appreciate
a lot of fun.
It. Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
You guys do awesome work here.
Dude, I appreciate you guys too as well. So there you go. The Fantasy Footballers. You can find them on the individual Twitter handles.
At Andy Holloway.
At FF Hitman.
At Jason FFL.
All right, cool. There so go check them out if you haven't already. If you haven't, I don't really know what you guys are doing with your lives. So go figure that out. A quick reminder before we get out of here. Starting next week, Monday, August 5th, we'll be going to two shows a week. We'll be recording on Mondays and Wednesdays. That means officially that the NFL summer is over because we are really getting back to work. So I look forward to doing that as well. Oh, also a quick note. We were hoping to get to Chargers camp. Scheduling issues may have prevented that. We're trying to see if maybe that'll happen. But
we've talked about a preseason game.
Yes.
Yeah.
So potentially a preseason game.
Yeah, we'll get something figured out.
We'll figure something out. It hasn't worked out the way we'd hoped, but we're going to try and get something going on with the Chargers as well. So there you go. That's it. We are done. We appreciate you listening. As always, you know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, the early bird gets the worm, but the second mouse gets the cheese. We'll see you next week.